I'd like to open the Tuesday, May 21st, 2013 session of the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee. We are in session. We have a informational hearing this morning on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a newly proposed trade agreement, and we're also going to be having a work session on Senate Bill 357A. And Beth, I'm thinking that it may make sense to get that out of the way, and then we can.
Yeah, we're missing a few members.
Yeah, that's true too. We'll hold off on that then, and give them an opportunity to be here. I'm going to open a informational meeting on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and with that, as I mentioned a moment ago, it is a proposed trade agreement. I passed out to the committee, and I think we have enough copies for the audience as well, a letter from Senator Merkley to President Barack Obama that kind of lays out, I think, broadly some of the concerns with this proposed trade agreement. The senator says in part in his letter that he wants to emphasize with the president his support for getting TPP, what he says, right. And he's, in order to make it right, he talks about the needs to address subsidies that foreign countries provide for their products, as well as their practices, including financial practices. He talks about the need to address misaligned currencies, foreign currencies. He talks about the need to address non-tariff barriers, and then goes on at considerable length to talk about the need to have enforceable minimum standards. And he cites specifically labor and environmental practices and goes on to describe the fact that the United States largely enjoys a middle-class society, and that absent international enforcement for these kinds of standards, it actually threatens our middle-class society. So that letter, as I say, I think broadly outlines some of the concerns. Those concerns were brought to us in this committee by members of the agriculture and forestry communities, and asked for an informational hearing on that basis. And I'd like to note particularly that several of the people who will be testifying today helped gather some of the witnesses, and we're very appreciative of that. With that, I'd like to call forward at this time, please, Mike Sullivan, Bill Cluding, and Tom Chamberlain, please. Good morning to each of you, and welcome to our committee.
Good morning, Chair Witt, Vice Chair Esquivel, Vice Chair McGowan. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I am the political director in Oregon for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers. I appear before you at the request of Chair Witt, who wanted to bring attention to this NAFTA-type trade agreement, the Pacific, or the Trans-Pacific Pact. Greg Pellison would have been here today, but he is in Port Angeles, Washington, negotiating another concessional bargaining contract, which has been like that for AWPPW since NAFTA began. Right now, China is the number one producer of paper in the world. Scrap paper is at record prices, to the point where companies in our own country are selling scrap paper abroad. I'm going to give testimony on some of the history of other bad trade agreements we've entered into. Matter of fact, they've all been bad, very bad. I got out of the Navy in 1971. I to took 2 weeks off and I went back to U.S. Steel, started an apprenticeship as a roll turner. That took me 7 years to complete. The reason for that was I worked 32-hour weeks, work weeks, for 7 years. Layoffs of 3 months, 9 months, 6 months. That's the explanation of that. I incurred a lot of debt. My wife had a child. We had one income. And when I say it took years to get out of that debt, I don't mean a couple. I mean quite a few. So what happened to steel, basic steel, before NAFTA was what they call dumping of steel, where a country produces steel and trades it cheaper than they can actually produce it, much like what's going on today. At that time in the mid-70s, there was 1.4 million steel workers in the United States. Now that number for the steel workers is roughly 750,000. Steel is third in the tier. Number one, paper. Number two is rubber. NAFTA was a treaty. And it takes 66 and two-thirds to pass. There are four types of treaty: war, peace, commerce, and trade. So the steel workers in a group called Made in the USA sued because 66 and two-thirds of the senators were not present for the vote. This went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and in their wisdom, they said, no, it's not a treaty, it's a presidential agreement. And so here we are today. The next thing that I'd like to point to is that China, because of their violations of human rights, had to be voted by the Congress every year to allow us to trade with them and back and forth. What happened was a thing called normal permanent trade relations. And that was the opener for the WTO, for the allowing of China into the WTO. We did away with the vote by Congress every year to accommodate them to come in the WTO. You know, and we know a lot about that now, because the WTO has the ability to circumvent laws all the way down to the county level. I could come with workers from wherever you want to say, go to a school and say, I want the food preparers to work here. And if you say no, I can sue you, your government, through the WTO and claim that you've taken away my ability to make a profit. And that's happened. There were things like the United States had TEDs, turtle extrusion devices that they put in their nets, shrimpers, so that the turtles could get out. This was to help the endangered species of turtle. Well, the Southeast nations sued through the WTO on that. It took away their ability to make a profit, and they won. And so the turtles lost. I'm basically going to wrap up now and let Bill Cluding and Elizabeth and Tom talk about other stuff. But you have to remember that in the reality of all this, what is the sense of having an elected body to represent us if a tribunal of three people in the WTO can circumvent the laws that you voted in? Really, the job you're going to save is your own, ultimately. For me personally, doing this job for AWPPW as political director since 2005, I feel like a Judas goat leading the sheep to slaughter. I cannot go to the AWPPW council and bang the table and say, we got a lot for our buck, boys, because we're losing out. AWPPW is now down to 1,000 members, and it was once a very vibrant organization. People in this building ask, where's the money? Where's the revenue? It's in your industrial base. We can't cut lawn in this state. We have lost our industrial base in pulp and paper. It's a green job. So I'll conclude with that, and I'll answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much. I'd like our panel to complete their testimony before we open it up for general questions. But before I lose track of this, Mike, could you give us some specific examples of where TPP is a threat to folks in the paper and or forest products industry?
Well, just because it continues what NAFTA did, they'll be allowed to trade, but not fairly. They'll be able to come into our markets, and we can't retaliate.
I see. Okay. Fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Who's next?
Thank you, Chair Witt. Committee, for the record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters Industrial Council. Usually I'm here trying to create jobs, but today I'm here trying to save jobs. Let me first show you a documented list of the facility closures in the state of Oregon since NAFTA, 23 pages. Now, granted, some of these facilities, we're talking 500 on these 23 sheets. Some of these facilities, it took 2 and 3 tries before they had to close the whole plant. Sometimes they laid off 500, 100, but pretty soon the whole plant was gone. 23 pages since NAFTA.
Bill, excuse my interruption, but how many jobs are represented on those 23 pages?
Over 54,000, Chair Witt. Oregon jobs.
Since about what time?
NAFTA went into effect in 1993.
Thank you. I'm sorry for the interruption.
I'm going to use NAFTA as the example because since this Trans-Pacific Partnership is not in effect, which I'm afraid it will be. I hope not, but NAFTA is a good example. 1 out of 4 U.S. manufacturing jobs have disappeared in this country since NAFTA. Imports have soared, exports have slowed. Just an example, before NAFTA, we had a trade deficit with Canada of $29 billion and a trade surplus with Mexico for $2.5 billion. Now we have a trade deficit between these two countries, a trade deficit between Canada and Mexico of $181 billion. 1992, Congressman Peter DeFazio came to this town. And talked to over 300 people. I was one of them 300. And he told us what was going to happen if NAFTA was passed. Right down the line, he told us. And everything he told us has happened. The Trans-Pacific Partnership countries that will be involved are the U.S., Australia, Brunei, Chile, Malaysia, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, Vietnam, Mexico, and Canada. Now this has to be, this has to be approved by Congress and the President. But after that, this will be the last trade agreement that ever forms. Because after that, any country can join this group by just a vote from these existing countries. It doesn't have to go through Congress. Chair Witt, committee, we will never ever heal from NAFTA. This country certainly can't afford another trade agreement, what we call NAFTA on steroids, of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Tom. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Tom Chamberlain. I'm the president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, representing 225,000 working men and women in Oregon. I'm glad you're taking up this issue to discuss the proposed Trans-Pacific Free Trade Agreement. As you have heard and you will hear from other speakers, this agreement will have significant effects on Oregonians and our economy. The Trans-Pacific Partnership would bring the U.S. into a trade agreement with many countries with whom we do not have any sort of trade agreement currently. Given that trade agreements introduced at the Asian-Pacific Economic Cooperative Conference, and that it has been proposed as an open agreement, as Bill said, that will allow new countries to join at any time. It could ultimately extend the provision of free trade to all APEC countries. Our Pacific Rim trading partners are important to Oregon's economy. And let's be really clear, we're an export state. We export far more at the Port of Portland than we import. We make things in this state. And that's important to understand when we discuss this economy. We grow things, we make things, we export things, including American-made cars out of the Port of Portland. Trade can be good if it's done right. But when it's done wrong, and let's take a partner, for instance, like Japan, who is an industrialized country with a strong economy, low tariffs, but they've used other means of manipulating their markets to limit access for U.S. products into certain industries, specifically the automotive industry. Meanwhile, Laos, a country with few protections for workers' rights and a much weaker economy than ours, has expressed an interest in joining the TPP talks. You know, the American worker, Oregon workers, can compete with any nation on the face of this earth if we have an even playing field. The problem right now is these trade agreements create an environment where we do not have an even playing field. Tariffs also impact industries, including the entertainment industry, a growing number of stagehands and acting jobs that we've currently seen come about in Oregon. And at a time when your colleagues on other committees are struggling to find ways to expand our industrial job base, expanding free trade agreements that have a history of moving manufacturing jobs out of state, of which we still have quite a few here in Oregon, is just the wrong move. Smart trade can benefit our economy, but trade for trade's sake doesn't necessarily benefit our Oregonians. Oregon's economy has a lot to lose in a poorly negotiated trade agreement, and unless at the very least our elected leaders are able to learn more about the TPP before pieces are agreed upon, we shouldn't go forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your being here. Appreciate your testimonies. Are there questions or comments for this panel? Representative Krieger, please.
Call which one of you referred to that this was a threat, this agreement. I understand where you're coming from, and you talked about the inability to have the resources that we need, for instance, timber. Can any of you elaborate on what the Endangered Species Act has caused and our inability to access resources, and that at every stage of the way, anybody, anywhere in the world with a postage stamp can file and stop a forest management operation and the impact of that?
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, none of these other countries have Endangered Species Act. We're the only one locked and bound to laws per such, and in cases that they are needed. I can safely say that there isn't one aspect in this state that won't be affected by this new agreement. Farming, ranching, you won't be able to afford to raise a beef in this state and try and sell it when they're dumping them from Australia. We're in trouble on this issue. As you know, the last three sessions, this state's been broke. We're broker now than what we were. We can't afford to take care of our schools, our kids, our elderly, disabled, and because of our industrial job base is gone in this state. Like I already stated, we'll never heal from NAFTA. There's no jobs for our grandkids. if this goes through, they'll never see a manufacturing job in this state, let alone nation. Thank you.
Representative Krieger.
You have this proposed agreement. Who designed, lays out, and brings this type of a proposal forward?
Right now, it's all top secret, Chair Witt. Representative Krieger, the public has not access to any of these talks going on. There's scheduled to be 17 rounds of discussions. It's all corporate heads and the big banks of the world are sitting at the table. Labor will not be involved in these. I guarantee you when this comes out, it is going to be this thick. 99.9% of our Congress people will not even read the second page. And that's one way NAFTA got passed. Again, I relate back to Congressman DeFazio. He took heat from the administration, a lot of heat. He kept bad-mouthing NAFTA, rightfully so. Who's going to step forward this time? I have no idea.
The other panel members want to jump in, please.
Well, the president and his staff are representing us at the table, so you're correct on big business and other nations, but the president's office.
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, that's well and good, but the president is really in favor of these agreements. He's much like Bill Clinton. And what I've been told is that if you write your congressman about the negotiations, or congressman or woman, you will find that they don't really know much of what's going on. And this document will probably be larger than NAFTA. And I think when NAFTA was voted on, there was actually one person that actually read the whole bill.
And we have had a question submitted by our committee here questioning the relevance of the Endangered Species Act to the trade agreement. And I think the point being that the Endangered Species Act would be one example of environmental protections that the United States has in place to protect our natural resources, which other countries do not do, and which may be under significant threat as a result of a potential trade agreement, correct or not?
That is correct. Anything that makes us that reduces our ability to be competitive, purchase economically, and if we give up protections, whether it's for workers or the environment, it'll have an impact here domestically.
And we have some folks following this particular panel that were probably more expert in environmental regulations perhaps than this panel. Don't want to put anybody on the spot, but I think we'll have some folks who will be very well positioned to discuss this further. Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I used to be in wood products. I was a general manager and a complex manager, and I'm thinking about, you know, the vehicle that was used, which was the spotted owl, which proved to be the biggest enemy of the spotted owl is a barn owl. It has nothing to do with second growth or old growth. I find it very disturbing when we utilize that to lock up our forest, and when we as a country and as a state are importing wood from Canada, when we have more logs today, more trees today than we had in the 1900s, and I find that very disturbing. The other thing that I find disturbing, thinking about it, is I'm thinking about what I did, and I worked at COGAP, 350 people, gone. Worked at SWF, 430 people, gone. Worked at Medco Incorporated in Medford, 1,200 people, gone. I worked at Tomco Incorporated in Sweet Home, 110 people, gone. I worked at Willamina Lumber Company, which is still running today, which is one out of every place I've ever worked when I was in wood products is the only one left because they had their own private timber. I think that's beneath contempt. And the other question I have is, Mike, you were talking about the steel industry. I wonder how much of the people that have been laid off is due to EPA regulations.
Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, I don't know that. I would fathom to say it pales compared to the trade agreements. Mm-hmm. The EPA forced steel mills to clean up. In Gary, Indiana, in the 50s, I lived in Chicago. The people in Gary, Indiana, where there were a lot of steel mills, didn't open their windows in the winter. And in Pittsburgh, the head of HR for Cascade Steel was a Pittsburgher, and he told me on Sundays he'd have to take a push broom and push the soot off his father's business. So Cascade Steel in McMinnville, where I worked for 25 years, is about 98% emission-free because they have a baghouse that collects all their byproducts and is shipped either to Arlington or Mexico. So I think it did cause some jobs, but not like the trade agreements.
I was just kind of curious on what effect, because see, what we're doing is we're talking about different things that affect the job market, whether it be NAFTA, whether it be EPA, whether it be, you know, using an animal endangered species act, but it all boils down to loss of jobs eventually. And those are good things. EPA is good because the steel mills were pretty tough. But on the other hand, all this comes into consideration when you talk about jobs.
Before I recognize another committee member, just for the point of clarification here, Bill, how would someone get on that list of, was it 54,000 lost jobs? How do you get on that list?
Chair Witt, committee, you have to apply to the U.S. Labor, and you have to become certified. They do a survey study on exactly what caused your facility to lay you off or shut down, and they make the decision, and then once you're certified, you become one of those 54,000.
So the certification you're talking about is trade certification?
Yes, the Trade Act, TAA.
Okay. So in other words, in order to get on that list, it's certified by the Department of Labor?
Yes, sir. Yes.
And the Labor Department has then certified that the facilities that have closed because of trade-related problems?
Competition, yes.
Okay, very good. And before I forget, can we get a copy of that for our committee's record?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Chair Witt. Representative Krager, Representative Esquivel, I can give you some facts and figures on what it did to the forestry about the Endangered Species Act. In 2009, even though we were kind of nationwide slump, Oregon imported mostly from Canada over 2 billion board feet of finished lumber. Oregon exported that same year 275 million board feet. That might answer your question, Representative Krager.
Chair Wood, if I can add on the trade assistance, every local union for AWPPW has qualified for trade assistance. And you have to remember that going through the process, all the debtors are paid first. The last to get their money are the workers. And so like with Blue Heron, they walked away with virtually nothing until the union took the employer to court, and they got some severance pay out of it.
Okay, and Mike, I want to bore down a little deeper on this one, and not to try and put you on the spot, but you said every closure from the AWPPW has been certified?
I can't say all. Chair Wood, I can't say all
okay.
plants, but all the workers who filed for trade assistance got it.
Okay, and over what period of time?
That I don't know. I'd have to check with Greg, Vice President Greg Pellison.
Okay, and do you have any idea how many workers or jobs that would entail?
I believe I do. They're with me. No, I don't. I don't have it here.
Can you perhaps get us that information? That would be helpful.
Chair Witt, I have a better form at home with these. It has actually has the number of employees involved. This list I have does not have the number of employees, so I will make sure I'll get that to you this week.
If you'd make that available to the committee, it would be appreciated. Representative Whitsitt's been very patient.
Thank you. As you're probably aware, I'm from Klamath and Lake Counties, and in my district, we've been totally and completely devastated by the ESA. We have two conflicting biological opinions for fish that call for all of the water in our entire Klamath Basin. One is for salmon downstream water, one is for suckerfish in the lake. We also have the spotted owl, which is ESA. All three of these things have essentially the potential and have taken away most of the people's ability to make a living in this area. We're looking at a 300,000-acre forest between Klamath and Lake Counties that is standing dead. It's called the Red Zone. Every tree in it is dead now from pine beetle, and it's just waiting to burn up. They can't get in. They can't harvest it. They can't use it for biomass. It's just an absolute nightmare down there. And we're looking in 2013 at losing all of our water for the entire basin. The Klamath Basin is one of the largest producers of cattle and of alfalfa in the state of Oregon, two of our largest agricultural commodities for export. And we're looking at a complete shutoff of all of our water. And so I feel like the trade unions are in a really great position to essentially help speak for those of us in this area, because you're from the Democratic Party. Typically, you represent the Democratic Party in the State House. That's who's in control. And so, I mean, I would ask you gentlemen to use everything in your power to help push back on the ESA and the environmental restrictions that we're finding that are just devastating our areas here in the state. Thanks.
Please.
Chair Witt, Representative Whitsitt, a good example, that 2 billion board feet of lumber that came into Oregon, came out of Canada's red zone, when they had a bug die off up there of I forget how many hundreds of thousands of acres, they immediately, as that tree was still good, they went in and they logged the whole thing, replanted, right back at it again. We don't seem to do that in this country.
Additional questions or comments for this panel? I'm not seeing any. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your testimony. And we'll look forward to the additional information that you'll be supplying us.
Give that to you, Chair.
Thank you. With that, I'd like to call up, please, Elizabeth Swager, Mark McPherson, and Rhett Lawrence. Good morning to each of you, and welcome to our committee.
Thank you.
And please determine among yourselves the order in which you'll testify.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to testify before you on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. My name is Elizabeth Swager. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Fair Trade Campaign. We're a statewide coalition of labor, environmental, and human rights organizations working together to promote just and sustainable international trade policy. That's policy that allows Oregon producers to compete on a level playing field. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, is of deep concern to our members, and we very much appreciate the committee's attention to it. It has the potential to greatly affect the economy, the environment, consumer safety, public policy space in the state and beyond. Starting with the basics, the TPP is a trade and investment pact under negotiation between the United States and 11 other countries throughout the Pacific Rim, which Bill mentioned, but just I'll reiterate. Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, Vietnam, and very shortly, Japan. Just among those 12 nations, the TPP is poised to set rules of international trade and investment that covers approximately 40% of the global economy. But the TPP's explicitly being negotiated as what's called the docking agreement, which Bill also mentioned, that means that other countries can join on over time. The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative has said that it's their intention for the TPP to eventually cover half of the countries in the world. In terms of its time frame, the TPP is currently in its 17th major round of negotiations this week in Lima, Peru. The pact's been under negotiation for 3 years now and is scheduled to conclude in October of this year. Whether or not negotiations meet that deadline, the window of opportunity to influence the content of the agreement is quickly closing. One of the loudest and most consistent civil society complaints about the TPP to date is that despite 3 years of negotiations, the U.S. trade representative still refuses to tell the American public what is being negotiated in our names. The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative has barred the public and policymakers, such as yourselves, from reviewing any draft texts and instead has been consulting on actual language for the TPP with a select group of 600 cleared advisors, the vast majority of whom represent transnational corporations like Walmart, Cargill, and Chevron. This is a rollback in transparency from many past negotiations and is something that most members of Oregon's congressional delegation have actually spoken out against. In a statement entered into the congressional record, Senator Wyden took issue that, and I quote, the majority of Congress is being kept in the dark as to the substance of the TPP negotiations, while representatives of U.S. corporations like Halliburton, Chevron, Pharma, Comcast, and the Motion Picture Association of America are being consulted and made privy to the details of the agreement. The ability to influence the TPP during its formative stages is crucial, because unlike the trade agreements of 30 or 40 years ago, which strictly dealt with issues like tariffs and quotas, the TPP and similar pacts set binding obligations that delve deeply into the public policy areas traditionally in the hands of Congress and state legislators. The USTR has said the TPP includes 29 separate chapters. As far as I know, the USTR office has refused to publicly issue a list of even the chapter titles. But thanks to a handful of leaked documents and reports on conversations with negotiators from other countries, I can tell you that the TPP chapters deal with financial regulations, medicine patents, internet protocol, energy policy, migration, and more. TPP chapters that may be of specific concern to this committee include those on sanitary and phytosanitary standards, technical barriers to trade, and government procurement. The sanitary and phytosanitary chapters cover food safety standards and affect not only whether Oregon consumers will have to eat products that don't meet our domestic safety standards, but also whether Oregon producers will have to compete with overseas fish farms, industrial fruit and vegetable operations, and others that aren't bound by the same standards as local producers. The technical barriers to trade chapter, along with the SBS chapter, is likely to cover consumer labeling, potentially handcuffing both state and federal government's ability to require label on things like genetically engineered salmon on one hand and country of origin labels on the other. The government procurement chapter, depending on what exemptions are written in and what levels of government purchasing it covers, could restrict by local food purchasing programs, so that could be in schools, prisons, and other public institutions. And of course, the traditional marketing market access offers in terms of tariff and quotas should also be of interest. As others will testify, unfair competition from New Zealand's monopolistic dairy industry is a major concern in the TPP, threatening to undercut Oregon's dairy farmers and producers alike. Farming organizations, processing worker unions, and others in the dairy sector across the United States, Canada, Mexico, and Japan have all raised warning flags about this issue. In Oregon, Senators Wyden and Merkley have both written to the U.S. Trade Representative, which I think you've seen, warning that if the TPP provides New Zealand full access to U.S. dairy market, the U.S. dairy market, without first properly addressing its anti-competitive practices, losses to the U.S. dairy producers could reach $20 billion in just the first decade of the pact. Beyond dairy, Australia wants greater access to the U.S. market for its sugar producers, something that was fairly well restricted in the earlier U.S.-Australia free trade agreement. If Australia gets its way, that would certainly have a negative consequence for Oregon's sugar beet growers and producers. When it comes to fruit and vegetables, we don't know yet what new access to foreign producers the USTR will offer and what new access to foreign markets they'll obtain. What I can say is that the U.S. State Department includes Malaysia, Peru, and Vietnam, all parties to the agreement, on their list of countries known to use forced labor in their agricultural sector. The countries within the TPP other countries actually are also listed as using child labor. It's very difficult for Oregon producers who don't benefit from taxpayer subsidies to compete on cost with developing countries, especially when transnational corporations decide to go in and set up large-scale export operations under the protection of a free trade agreement. TPP countries like Vietnam, not necessarily in agriculture, but certainly in sectors like manufacturing and computer programming, are already being marketed as low-cost alternatives to China. Vietnam's average minimum wage is just a third of that of China. So it's very, very difficult for Oregon producers to compete on a level playing field. Put simply, when it comes to food items that most shoppers buy based on the price, the TPP has the potential to hurt a lot of the state's producers. Let me close by saying that as the TPP debate moves forward, the PAC's boosters are going to talk a lot about its potential to increase exports. I'd be surprised if they talk about the TPP's limit on food, safety standards, consumer right to know, public procurement, or any of that. And I'd be surprised if they talk about imports. The Korea Free Trade Agreement was the last such pact promoted as a big job creator in the United States. And the numbers of that first year of the pact are now in. Not only is our overall trade deficit with South Korea up by a whopping 37%, but U.S. exports are actually down by 10%. Even exports of agricultural commodities that were supposed to benefit dramatically are down. Poultry exports are down by 41%, pork down by 24%, beef down by 8%. So I conclude with that just to say that sometimes we hear promises about how good trade proposals will be for exports for from companies that are actually wanting to move production overseas or want to use a trade agreement as a backdoor way of reshaping regulations. That doesn't mean that there isn't potential for exports with the TPP and other PACs, but rosy promises need to be evaluated with a little common sense. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony and your appearance. I'm going to come back during discussion and ask the broad question for recommendations from each of you of what this committee might be able to do in terms of helping advance the interests of ag and natural resources in this state vis-a-vis this proposed trade relation, trade pact, rather. So not wanting to catch any of you off guard, give you a moment to think about that during testimony. We can revisit that question next. And with that, who is next?
Happy to go. Got the mic here.
Okay, go
thanks.
Ahead, Chair Webb, members of the committee, my name is Rhett Lawrence. I'm the conservation director for the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club. Here today to present testimony both on behalf of our 20,000 members and supporters in Oregon and for our nearly 600,000 members nationwide. I will note at the start that I am not an expert on this issue. I have been provided some information from other folks within the Sierra Club who are and can certainly get more information from them to this committee if you need it. And secondly, I would note that as you've heard before, so much of what is in the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is just top secret. So we, you know, having not been able to be privy to those conversations, see what the details of the proposal are, it's hard to give our specific responses, to what might be in that pact. So, you know, we do believe that this, you know, the fact that this agreement has been kept in secret for so long is quite troubling. Appreciate the efforts of this committee to address this issue, to hopefully bring some more of these negotiations to light and get some more transparency during the final stages of this negotiation process. But I do think there are a few things that we suspect will be implicated by this agreement. You've already heard about the impacts of illegal and unregulated logging in other parts of the Pacific Rim. You know, they do not have the same environmental regulations in place, and so essentially jobs will just be exported by putting this agreement in place, or what we believe it will be. And so we believe that we just cannot permit the TPP to move forward without some sort of provisions addressing illegal logging in other countries. Also, as you heard briefly, there are illegal and indiscriminate fishing practices happening all around the Pacific Rim, having a impact of some $15 billion a year to U.S. fisheries. So we also would urge that as the TPP moves forward, that we can no longer ignore the crisis of overfishing in the Pacific and perhaps worsen it through the terms of this agreement. And finally, one other way that the TPP we believe could dramatically damage Oregon forests and our economy is by mandating automatic export approval for liquefied natural gas. As we understand it, the TPP would prevent the United States Department of Energy from considering the public interest in exporting LNG to other TPP signatories. We Sierra Club does have some concerns about the proposed LNG export terminals in the state, and believe that the TPP needs to not just rubber stamp LNG export proposals. We need to have standards in place to make sure that the public interest and environmental protections are being honored. So In conclusion, I would just say that the TPP, with the sketchy knowledge that we do now have, appears to be a bad deal for our state. We appreciate the efforts of this committee in bringing some of those issues to light, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you very, very much.
Chair Witt.
Welcome.
Thanks. My name is Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I want to also thank you for giving me I can talk loud. For giving me the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Mark McPherson. I'm an organizer with Teamsters Joint Council 37 of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. We're located here in the state of Oregon in Portland. We represent about 22,000 members in the state, and I've been a Teamster for 34 years, and I've been a labor organizer for six. The Teamsters have a lot of grave concerns about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and it was interesting to see that pulp and paper workers also refer to it as NAFTA on steroids. First, we're concerned about the labor provisions, the labor rights provisions in the agreement, and we do support the U.S.'s current position on standards for core labor rights that are enforceable by trade sanctions. But how those rights will be defined or enforced is unclear, and that gives us a lot of concern. I think it's worth noting that to date we have not seen a single free trade agreement that has improved workers' rights anywhere in the world, in the United States or abroad. Recently we saw 1,100 garment workers killed just this last month in a facility in Bangladesh. This is a witness of the latest sacrifice on the altar of free trade. I mean, this is the kind of thing that happens. Second, we're appalled by the secrecy with which this broad-ranging agreement is being negotiated. Others have expressed this as well. This has really, really been done secretly. The TPP is going to include chapters on topics like investment, environment, government procurement, intellectual property, and other things that will impact the everyday life of working Americans. Policymakers, reporters, advocates, and the people whose lives will be affected by this deserve to know what's being proposed in the American public's name. And they should be able to comment on those proposals before negotiations have concluded. And I'm afraid soon it'll be too late for there to be any change or any comment. And third, on a personal level, as Teamsters, we're particularly concerned about the dairy chapter of the TPP. The Teamsters represent about 30,000 dairy workers here in the United States and about another 10,000 in Canada. And I apologize on your written copy of my testimony. There's a misprint there. There are actually 700 to 800 workers in the state of Oregon, dairy workers, at about 10 facilities. The number may seem small, but it's substantial when you consider the peripheral jobs in terms of warehousing, transport, and retail that are impacted by those jobs. I will also make a note that of the 700 to 800 workers at 10 facilities, there are 5 facilities in Portland, one in Tillamook, one in Myrtle Point, one in Clackamas, one in Salem, and one in Mendenville. As we understand it, and again, this process is taking place in secret. The pending TPP trade agreement will have a tremendous impact on how dairy products are produced, processed here in Oregon and throughout the United States. We are concerned about sanitary standards and market access. We're concerned that this agreement will kill U.S. jobs and Oregon jobs as well. Many of us don't know much about New Zealand, and it's one of the 12 countries in negotiations. We are told that New Zealand is to milk and dairy what Saudi Arabia is to oil. It's the largest dairy producer in the world. They have huge dairy firms, and the largest is Fonterra. It's almost a state-owned monopoly. Letting New Zealand have access to United States dairies and be able to come in here and compete with us could really be devastating to our industry. We have three simple requests we've had for the TPP, and that is we've asked that the U.S. Trade Representatives publish all the negotiating texts, consult with the relevant congressional committees and stakeholders, and Oregon should be a stakeholder. You mentioned earlier, what can you do? Well, this is I think, something that we can do here in Oregon, is insist that we have some transparency. So we ask, how will this agreement affect Oregon workers? I mean, this is important. You know, we need to know, and it's all secret, and they aren't publishing this information. We need to know how it's going to affect our industry. We've asked Congress to provide trade negotiators with mandatory negotiating objectives that would guarantee U.S. goals must be met regarding food safety, sovereignty, conservation, those sorts of things. We've asked that there's the process by which a majority of Congress must vote to certify that the pact is in the public interest. This comes back to this is something, an issue that's been put on the fast track, or is being attempted to be put on the fast track, will be just a up and down vote and with no discussion. To date, none of these things have happened. We've learned from experience that free trade is not free. And as a side note, I would say that I read a speech by FDR from back in the 40s, and he referenced free trade, but he didn't call it free trade. He called it reciprocal trade. And that's a better term, because this is a real misnomer. This sounds always, free always sounds good, you know, but it's not reciprocal. Why should we believe this trade pact is going to be any different than NAFTA or any of the other free trade agreements? I think we have the answer. It won't be any different. It'll decimate our economy. I think it'll be a bad thing for Oregonians, working Americans. As a Teamster, I know something about negotiations, and I'll tell you from experience, the first rule you do is you meet with your employees, and you determine what's in their, you let them determine what's in their best interest. They tell you what is in your best interest. Well, when you have non-transparent trade agreements and negotiations going on, and the American public and their representatives aren't even allowed to make comments on this. I mean, this is not negotiating, I've got to tell you. It's negotiating in a bad way. TPP is a bad deal, and we'd like to join with our brothers and sisters in Canada, National Farmers Union, National Family Farm Coalition, and a growing global cohort from Mexico to Japan to demand that the dairy chapter should be abandoned and the TPP dairy deal should be taken off the table. I thank you for your time, and I'll do my best to answer any questions when we come around to them. Thanks.
Thank you very, very much, each of you. Appreciate your appearance today and your testimony as well. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Krieger?
Brett, you talked about illegal logging, and I think it was in reference to other countries, and I wondered if you had any specifics of where and what makes it illegal. Is it based on our standards, or is it based that they don't have any standards?
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, I would say the latter, that most of the other countries that would be signatories to the TPP just don't have any standards, you know, don't have an Endangered Species Act, don't have riparian buffers, that sort of thing, can, you know, just log sort of indiscriminately. And so, you know, their logs are what we end up importing, because, you know, for various reasons, you know, perhaps we're not able to log so many of our own anymore.
Thank you. Representative Whitsitt.
Yes, I was wondering if the Sierra Club will support changing the ESA so that we have the ability in our areas to log in the parts that are being kept from being logged by the ESA. Will Sierra Club support that?
Chair Witt, Representative Whitsitt, I would guess that it would sort of depend on the situation. I mean, I am aware that you know, many folks have issues with the ESA, you know, especially specific applications of it in certain areas. We certainly believe that the ESA has done some very important things and continues to do that. But I think there probably would be situations where you know, we could potentially find areas where we would agree that, you know, that that the ESA is not as, you know, should not be applicable in certain areas, and that those could be allowed, you know, for thinning projects or the like. So,
Representative Krieger.
Both the chair and I spent 5-6 years on the Board of Forestry and happen to have a tree farm. And we go to a lot of effort to not only meet the standards that are in place within the Oregon Forest Practice Rules, but we go beyond that. And we do it because we have a stewardship ethic regarding those lands. Not every acre across the landscape lends itself to forest management, in my experience. There are high-risk sites because of soil types. There are special sites, just they themselves, Opal Creek would be a good example. Like I said, the riparian zones, high-risk sites, all these different things that we want to protect, because we value these as much as we do the production of timber. But it seems to me, from watching, and I've been involved in this since 1964, which means in a year, it's going to be 50 years. It's a while. And I've seen myself move in my values and the way that I gauge things. There's another young fellow from the Sierra Club. I can't remember his name that was here. Do you know his name?
Brian Pasco.
Yes. Yeah. I met him out in the hall. And I invited him. The first guy at time ever a Sierra Club member was even allowed in my office. And we spoke for an hour and a half. And I felt that, not that there was movement, but there was ability to have a conversation that would meet a lot of your values. That would encourage you to do that. A lot of your values are shared by people here. I know the American Tree Farm System. I know Oregon Small Woodlands and things that we do and the ethics that we have. Those efforts are on private land, but they can be applied to the federal land also. So I would encourage you to communicate more, come by, visit, understand what we do and why. And if I'm still learning at 73, you can continue to learn also.
Chair Wett, Representative Krieger, I appreciate the sentiments and definitely look forward to having those conversations with you.
Representative Rudin.
I'm just curious, are we going to have an opportunity to have a conversation about this pact and what any action we might take as a board, and specifically are we, you know, writing a letter or passing a bill or something, because I think it's an issue I didn't know anything about, but it's critical to our state's economy, probably our country's economy, and the workers that we have here. I grew up in an AWPP I can almost say it too,
AWPPW.
You know, that's what was put in the bread on our table.
Yes.
And so it really saddened me, as well as Representative Esquivel's history, you know, of all these industries have gone out of business over the years. We need to try to help stop that. But I'd like to get our conversation focused on,
yes,
what this committee might realistically do, because, you know, we're going to be out of here in a month. So,
yes.
Anyway.
Representative Reardon, thank you. And that actually speaks to the question that I kind of tossed out, that I'm going to be looking for recommendations from this panel here in a moment as to what they think would be good suggestions for us to pursue. So absolutely, we hope to get there. Are there other questions or comments? I have, yes, Representative Thompson, please.
Now, one of the things I think we have to get very serious about here in Oregon, and probably nationally, is the role that regulation plays in the overall economy. I've lost all of the mills out of my district now, except one, and it's importing logs from out of state. At the same time, there are forests in my district that are growing up with such high density that one out of every three trees is dying or dead, and that will be two out of every three before long, because they're not being thinned, they're not doing anything, they're just standing forest fire problems. And at the same time, we have an insatiable hunger, even in the poor economy, for lumber, and we're importing it. Now, somewhere in there, I suspect we've lost the balance. It's too expensive and too environmentally sensitive to do things here whereby we can get the same product from overseas at less cost. So we've got to get that back into balance somehow, so it makes sense to do things here. I mean, we can't mine gravel, we can't cut trees, we can't mine other things. I mean, it just, we've just completely gone into a shutdown mode, and I'm buoyed by, excited by the prospects that there's some movement. I mean, Nature Conservancy is now hiring foresters. I never thought I'd ever see that happen, but they're starting to get it. But we have tremendous potential. We're sitting here in Oregon with Coos Bay as the last underdeveloped deepwater port on the West Coast. We can't seem to get our act together on how to make that economically viable. I think we started talking in 1953 or something about extending a freeway from I-5 over to Coos Bay to help aid that effort. Well, we still don't have a really good highway. And my whole district in the West Valley is handicapped by all of these things. We've overregulated and stopped production of or development of the transportation grid. So we have companies come out there all the time and look at industrial sites. The first question is, what's the fastest way to get to I-5? Well, you go through Salem or you go through Corvallis, neither one of which are satisfactory to trucks. That kills it right there, and the jobs go out of state or to Beaverton or something like that. But we have this huge imbalance that we've created, this legislature largely has created over the years. And I think we need to back up and take a look at the chessboard, say, okay, what is it that's causing some of this? And it's a huge problem for labor. It's going to be a problem for the environment. If we don't get out of this recession, I think we're in for a really tough haul, because people will kill the last deer for food, eat the last salmon, and cut the last tree down for firewood in an economically depressed area. It's only when you get economic vitality that people start getting interested in recreation and preservation and all those other values. Those values go down the tubes in a hurry when there are no jobs and no economic vitality. So somewhere in there, we have to all get together and stop the environmental versus anti-environmental, labor versus anti-labor, and figure out what we need to do to make this all work as best we can for everybody. And I'm not seeing that happen. We built in these huge restrictions, and it's hurting everybody.
Yes. I want to extend an opportunity if anyone would like to respond.
Chair Witt, Representative Thompson, I agree with you, and there are conversations that can and should be had to ways to address that. I mean, and for purposes of this hearing here today, I mean, I think the important point is that those same restrictions do not apply in the other countries that are going to be signatories, and so we need to figure out ways, while we're having that conversation, about ways to make sure that we're not just exporting our jobs overseas
and abetting environmental catastrophes in other parts of the world while we're protecting and killing our own economy. There's something so illogical in that, and I think your reference to Bangladesh and labor was exactly right. If we want to continue down that road, we can take all of our manufacturing jobs somewhere else in the world and be a net importer to people who have no money to buy the imports. So we have to find a balance, and we haven't done that. So.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's an interesting conversation we're having. I mean, obviously, we're all over the map on different topics, but I think they are related. I have an interesting perspective probably because I make my living now as a trader, and yet I have not been in favor of Maybe one trade agreement so far in the last 20 years. That's it. And yet we export crops from our orchard overseas that are important, and I engage now in selling products, but we export, we don't import in our business. And it is much easier to import and make money importing, trust me. But it's a philosophical choice. Having said that, I grew up in Coos Bay, and I do think there are problems with some of our laws. However, having said that, I'm not interested in trying to lower ourselves down to the standards I see in other countries when traveling and doing business there. And so, particularly in Vietnam, which is a beautiful country, a beautiful culture, but every time I talk about selling products, oh, it's too expensive. We really have no interest in buying many things that we're selling at the moment at the prices that we're willing to sell them to. And I don't see how, frankly, in some of these countries, I don't see how we could possibly get to their standards. No matter what we did to change our regulations and our restrictions, I don't think we could tolerate going to that level as human beings. At one time, maybe in a culture's development, it's fine to have children working in factories and forced abortions and those kind of things. That's not where we're at, and I don't ever want to move us that direction that quickly. Now, I do think there are legitimate issues with some of our regulatory climate and our tax policies and other things that make people make a rational decision within developed countries where they're going to locate. And if they're free to do it, they do it. And tariffs and other things have been a way to address that for a long time. And it's used occasionally now. I think we did it on tires and maybe we did it on steel. So it's used occasionally. And there are some, I think, solar manufacturers asking to use it on tariffs, but they're using anti-dumping penalties. So, you know, I think we're probably getting more sophisticated about how we use trade mechanisms. We've almost reached a tipping point where we exported so many jobs overseas that their middle class now is so much stronger than ours that it is actually worth it to go sell there because they have more money than we do, and they'll buy things at a reasonable price. Now, I can see already that the countries that are in that situation are complaining, though, that everyone's moving the factories from there to even lower-wage countries. And I know several people who own businesses here in Oregon who've said that. So we're done with China. We're going to go to Vietnam. They're too uppity in China. It's too expensive in China. We're going to go to Vietnam. And it's like, wow, this is not good. So anyway, this is a long rant, but I don't think all of these topics are unrelated, but I think limiting your worldview to we need to lower our standards and make it easier to do business here exclusively is not understanding the reality of a lot of these places. But thinking everything's fine here is also not the reality either, because a lot of these rural communities, there's nothing else there. You know, it's a problem all over the world, urbanization and the loss of rural jobs and rural economic livelihood, but there's nothing else there in many of these places but natural resources, and we do need to be able to use them. I think having investor protection provisions in some of these trade agreements in the past have put natural resource laws at risk. Some of them, I almost felt like I wish they would use them to cancel so we could start over, to be honest. But I do think that those kind of protections make me very nervous. You know, not being able to have a Clean Water Act because some Canadian water company challenges it as an unfair restriction on their profit making, I thought was complete loss of sovereignty for this country and terrible, provision to have. So, at least for me, I'm ranting a lot. I'll stop. I have strong opinions about this. I work in the business. I think you can have fair trading, reciprocal trading that does advantage everybody. And I've chosen to actually spend my money and my time pursuing that. But I commend us for talking about this issue because it's not just a federal issue. It affects every portion of everybody's life in this country.
Thank you very much, Representative Clem Mark.
Please.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman and Representative Clem, I appreciate your comments. I feel like the discussion is kind of going in two different directions, and I mean, what happened in Bangladesh, without regulation in this country, we'd have that here. We had that here in the 1920s, okay? We need regulation. I, 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 the discussion on regulation, I think, is fair and legitimate because maybe we're over-regulated or maybe regulation isn't fair. But that's a separate topic from free trade, I think. I mean, you know what? If we reduce regulation in this country, it still doesn't correct the imbalance, I don't think, between the pay and the living standards in foreign countries and what we have here in this country. And I respect everybody's comments on regulation, but I think it's off topic a little bit. You know, I think the real question is about free trade and how do we protect ourselves at this point? What do we do now? You know, we are where we are now. We need to do something about it.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Oh, thank you, Chair Witt. It will come as no surprise, and with all due respect to Mr. Lawrence, I think we will agree to disagree on a certain topic that involves an export terminal. I want to touch base on Representative Whitsitt. She has some of the same concerns that I do. We do have, and Representative Krieger, we do have stands of forest that need to be thinned and cleaned. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. We do have opportunities in this state to mine and move product. We do have opportunities to create an export environment where we can provide an opportunity for the maritime industry to fuel on a cleaner fuel source, on transportation to move towards compressed gas or liquid natural gas for truck traffic. We can move towards allowing Hawaii to power their power plants on liquid natural gas and get away from bunker fuel and diesel. Alaska's having similar issues. So there are other sides to this conversation that I want to continue to bring up. And I don't want to lose sight of the fact that, to your point, that the regulatory isn't part of this conversation necessarily, but it does play into the opportunity to build an $8 billion privately funded investment in a state where our local timber-based communities are struggling mightily, and create an opportunity to put some people to work, continue to invest in an asset of a deep water port that we all know needs to be, I think, used appropriately in creating the markets that this state continues to increase, whether it's agriculture or industry or timber. We have some opportunities that are really key right now, and we have a very short window in which to take the opportunity to move through that window. With all the regulations in place, making sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, that everybody's doing things correctly according to the rules, whether it's in the timber industry or the mining industry or exporting a commodity. I get pretty excited about this, as you all know. I've been involved in it for a long time. We have assets we need to invest in. We have transportation infrastructure that needs work. But that all comes back to trade. You do those things so you can move products, and you can take advantage of an opportunity to turn an economy around and balance that import-export. So putting in my two cents worth at the end of this, I think it's something I needed to do. Was not going to say a word. I was trying to be good and keep my powder dry. But I think this all does tie together. I think this all comes together at some point. And I, to Representative Reardon's point, it's time to focus on what we can do as a committee. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's a resolution. Maybe it's a letter. Maybe it's something. But from the conversations we've had in this room today, I feel like even though we come from divergent experiences and places, I think there we all see concerns with this, with the TPP.
Representative Reardon.
I want to try to wrap this up because we've got a meeting to be too in just
too.
A few minutes.
Yeah.
And I just totally agree with everything that's been said here. And I love the dialogue about, you know, trying to, you know, look at making better use of our natural resources, and we absolutely need to do that. It's just that once in a while I get really focused and task oriented, and I'm looking at the clock, and the clock said this thing is being, if I read this right, so this is going to possibly go into effect in October. Is that right? And
that's correct.
So if that's October, we probably won't be able to fix all the regulations and other issues that have been under discussion for the last 20 or 30 years. So I would just like to encourage us to get a little more focused on what we can do. I think some kind of letter referendum, jumping up and down as a group, would be great. There's also is a group up in the Portland area. I can find out the name of them that has been focusing on exporting. It's like Export Coalition or something of that nature. And I can find out the exact name. It's on my desk. But they've been working on what can you do to increase exports. I think they could possibly be a good ally for us. So I will research that. Maybe they send a letter as well. And maybe there are just things that we can do to help strengthen our own export efforts. They've put out some brilliant plans that I don't have time to share right now, but there's a lot we can do. I'm just concerned about trying to fix logging and harvesting and all of that in the next month or so.
Representative Reardon, I may be calling on you here for some of your thoughts on our committee's next move, but I am going to get to those recommendations here in a moment. Not unlike Representative Clem, I've spent the last two decades opposed to virtually every trade agreement that's come across our shores. And with one exception, while I didn't like the trade agreement, I wasn't personally opposed to the Korean trade agreement, although I had every fear that it was going to impose unfair trade to much of our country. I was at least hopeful that there was a promise there that our state's meat industry would realize some benefits. And when I see our pork industry, our exports down 41%, and beef, that was the one that we were promised. Absolutely, our domestic beef industry was going to make out on that. And I see that it's, Elizabeth, I think you said down 8%.
That's right.
There is not one instance in any of these trade agreements that I can see that anybody has benefited from, even when we hold out the promise that, you know, Oregon is finally going to make out. We're going to give you the Korean free trade agreement, and yeah, you're not going to like it, but at least the beef industry is going to make out. Well, the pork industry, the poultry industry, and the beef industry all took it, just like the 54,000 workers who've lost their jobs, and on and on and on and on. I heard your testimony about some horrendous concerns with regard to labor regulations, forced labor, child labor, and our domestic workforce having to compete against this, impossible. I heard a lack of foreign labor rights, and you described a number of those. I didn't hear quite so much about a lack. We acknowledge that there was a lack of forestry regulations in most of these countries, but how about ag practices? Do any of you know about some of the more egregious and horrendous ag practices that some of these countries allow? We're assuming that anything goes, I guess.
Well, you know, what I can say, Mr. Chairman, is that we won't know about the ag practices because of the labeling involved in that's being dwindled under the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So labeling such as GMO, such as country of origin, those are all things that we won't have information on. So consumer right to know is really at threat. So the agricultural practices are something that we won't be aware of. We won't even be aware of where these products are coming from.
And my final question before the big one, we've got to do this quick. Our committee is now abundantly more aware than we were when we started this hearing. And myself, and I assume some of the other committee members, are agitated by what we heard. Are these things conducted in secrecy to keep this kind of information away from the American public so that they're not as agitated as I'm getting? Is that why we do this in secret? Why is this not open to the public so that a public can debate whether or not we're going to be in competition with countries that are out there using child labor, forced labor, and are cutting down every tree and decimating all of their wildlife? Why is this not open to the public?
So I'll take that. So thank you for that question, Mr. Chairman. I can only speculate, but given experience of past trade negotiations, we can look at the open negotiations of the free trade area of the Americas, where people did learn the impact and they knew what was in the chapters, and people organized to oppose it because it was going to be detrimental for the economy, for workers, not just here, but in the other countries involved as well. So, you know, when people know what is being negotiated, and when they know it's going to impact their industry, their environment, people speak up and oppose it. So I believe that that is the reason why there's a lack of transparency on these negotiations.
I think if we knew the battle in Seattle, it'd get a heck of a lot bigger than Seattle. So anyways, the big question, the final one, recommendations for what we ought to be considering doing as a committee here.
Take it away, Elizabeth.
Okay. Well, just yesterday, glad you asked, just yesterday a group of 50 state legislators from 24 states sent a letter to the acting U.S. Trade Representative talking about how the Trans-Pacific Partnership would impact environment, energy, and natural resources in their states. I think that, you know, some of the ideas and concerns expressed here today in this informational meeting are things that should be shared with the acting U.S. Trade Representative. So I would make the suggestion that a letter is written on some of those concerns.
Thank you very much. Anyone else?
Chair Witt, I guess I would add, as Mark said in his testimony, I really do feel like the state of Oregon should be a party to these negotiations. I mean, we're not going to be at the table, but you know, the fact that none of you all are privy to any of the information coming out, members of Congress are not either, that in addition to sending a letter suggesting, you know, some sort of minimum environmental standards be a part of the agreement, that, I mean, I really feel like we should be demanding as a state that we have the right to know this information, we have the right to see what's being negotiated so that we, you know, can express our opinions and work for better solutions.
Thank you very, very much.
I would also add, just excuse me,
please,
Mr. Chairman,
real quick.
I would add that to ask for an impact on how it's going to affect Oregon's economy.
Thank you very much, Mark. Very important. With that, I'm going to adjourn close the informational meeting and announce that I'm going to carry over the work session to Thursday, May 30th. And with that, I'm going to ask to work with our vice chairs for follow-up action. Representative Reardon, your input. With that, I close and we stand adjourned.